Robbie H. from Phoenix, Arizona, at the 2016 Birmingham Fall Retreat, drinking the Kool-Aid.
Awesome. I'm Robbie, recovered sex addict. Still the same person I was an hour ago, and I still don't do what I used to do an hour ago. So this afternoon, I'm really grateful to get to share with you something that's meant so much to me, means so much to my recovery and the recovery of the people I recover with. And today we're going to be talking about the Kool-Aid, drinking the Kool-Aid. Some of you maybe have talked about it before, maybe you've seen me, maybe not. I don't care. You'll find out in a bit, won't you? What is the Kool-Aid? It's the frickin' magic pill, man. You know, we're always at, what do I have to do to get sober, right? Just give me the pill. Pharmacy, no copay. I'm not saying Obamacare, nothing like that. Just, it's the magic wand. It's the remedy. You came here for the remedy, all the way from Atlanta, and you're getting the remedy. Thank God you didn't miss this, right? It's the cure. It's the medication. It's working the damn program. That's it. So some of you already have the cure. Some of you are in desperate need of the cure. I don't know. You tell me. But it's working the SA program. It's carrying the SA message. It's just working a daily program. It helps us get sober, and it helps us help others do the same. You know, working an SA program can be really overwhelming when you're new, right? What do I do? Like, I can't do that. I'll do anything you say except for that. Anything but that, you know? And at times in my home group, and this afternoon I get to talk a lot about my home group. And my home group's name is San Jose SAA. We're in Mesa, not San Jose, but San Jose SAA. We found that by packaging kind of the SA program in an easy-to-use, easy-to-work, easy-to-carry format, you know, it makes it easier for us to carry it, to deliver it, to share about it, and it's a lot easier for people to pick it up. I don't think I'm going to be sharing anything new today that some of you haven't already heard, but hopefully maybe this will be the time that it works for you. And Garrett's here, so now we can start. Thanks. Oops, I've got handouts, so I need someone. I'll take one. Just everyone gets a Kool-Aid packet, since we're talking about drinking the Kool-Aid. And on the back of the Kool-Aid is the recipe for the Kool-Aid packet. Now, God is still working with me on my attention to detail. Apparently, he got my work real fast thing down, but not my attention to detail. So, of course, there is a typo on the sticker. I have shame about that. I have fear about that. So don't go there, okay? Just don't go there. I'm not going to. So enjoy the typo. It's a gift from my, you know, speed. There you go. So drinking the Kool-Aid. You've heard that phrase before, right? Some of you? I'm not going to encourage you all to drink a poison fluid to commit mass suicide. Some of you possibly. All of you know. We were talking the other day at the meeting about where the name drinking the Kool-Aid came from. And, you know, one of those meetings where you talk and whatever. There's part of that name that comes from maybe that business thing, drink the Kool-Aid. You know, get in line like a good little lemming, you know? Toe the company line, rah-rah, team spirit, right? That's part of the drinking the Kool-Aid for business. And yet there's that other event. The other event where apparently, there was a group that was led to drink a poisonous Kool-Aid and commit mass suicide. That's also not dissimilar for us either, because for me to get sober, for me to have a spiritual awakening, who I was, and more importantly, how I worked my program, had to die. It was not working, and it was killing me. And so, if you want to consider this the rah-rah Kool-Aid to, you know, push your recovery, great. If you want to say bye-bye to the way you were working your program, awesome. Whatever you want to do. This naming it wasn't an official act, and it was by no means meant to trigger emotions over a very tragic event. But somehow I think God had a hand in realizing that there's a little bit of that is true. I could not continue living the way I was living without dying. So I was going to drink the Kool-Aid one way or another. But that was easier than I thought. I thought I'd get some pushback. So, you all have packets, right? And you've all noticed the typo. Rock on. Yes, sir. Oh, you don't have a packet. If someone else comes in, if you don't like your flavor, tough. I don't care. So what we're going to be doing this morning, this afternoon, we're going to go through generally what the ingredients are in Kool-Aid, And then we're going to go through drinking the Kool-Aid at different stages of recovery. You may already be drinking this. Rock on for you. Then this is just an affirmation that Robbie thinks you're awesome. Yeah, very valuable for the weekend. This may not be something you're doing. Maybe a way of tweaking your program, or maybe a way for you to package this and share it with others in the fellowship. Do with it what you will, okay? So I'm going to go through the first ingredient, three meetings, three plus meetings a week. I'm very fortunate in my home group, our one building. We have 15 meetings a week and three monthly meetings a week. And in Metro Phoenix, there are about 56 meetings a week. So I have a lot of options. I have a lot of options. That's all I'm done. It's all about me. We have a lot of options. And in your town, maybe you have one, maybe you have six, maybe you have seven. Maybe you don't have as many face-to-face meetings. Yet we're really lucky in SAA to have a wealth of telemeetings. Telemeetings are available all the time, all the time. So if anyone doesn't have access to face-to-face meetings, there's plenty of telemeetings. So quickly, as we go through this, three meetings a week, three plus meetings a week. We tell ourselves, we tell our newcomers, you're going to three meetings a week, not two, three plus. Why that many? And you can do what you want. One meeting's not enough. If I show up to the meeting with a stick up my whatever, pissed off at my boss, the seat I wanted to sit at because I'm in the same seat every day and some fool sat in my seat, you know, I'm not listening. One meeting's not enough to get new phone numbers for newcomers. One meeting's not enough to hear the message, especially if in that fellowship, that one meeting they're not reading the green book. It's just a topic meeting where someone's vomiting about their cat and their mother and their finances, you know. We talk about going to three meetings, at least three meetings a week. One of them, making sure that they're sober meetings. Maybe some of sober meetings. A meeting where they're carrying the solution, not the problem. A meeting where they're talking about God, the steps, the solution, not how to act out, where to act out. I'm all about tools of recovery. Tools slow down the race. There's speed bumps. But if a meeting doesn't connect me to the steps, it's not sober. And I'm susceptible. I need the solution at my meetings. We encourage our sponsees to go to at least one Green Book study a week. The Green Book, since the last convention, it's the only book in existence in the whole world that tells us how to work the 12 steps of SAA. There are other books that tell us how to work the 12 steps. Phenomenal foundational books in AA. But the Green Book is the only book in the world that talks about our addiction and connects our addiction with the solution. And there's some valuable information in that. The guys I sponsor, they must go to at least one Green Book meeting a week. If you can't go to it, change your job. That won't work, change your life. There's a solution. Topic meetings are fantastic to feel included, but I need to go to hear the solution. That three plus meetings per week with my sponsees, with the folks I recover with in our fellowship, they're non-negotiable. You can't make them, again, telemeeting. And I have some guys I sponsor. Well, I've got my church group. Awesome. They're good. Still have to go to three meetings a week. I see a therapist. Awesome. Good. You still got to go three meetings a week. I don't know another way to do it. And I say three plus. You know, honey, I haven't gone to three meetings a week in years. I go to more because I can. Three plus meetings a week is doable. All you have to do is divide the number of hours you used to act out and masturbate by about 15, and you're still exceeding three meetings a week. You know, we were all really good time managers. We could always manage time to act out three meetings a week. The next ingredient to talk about is phone calls. Now, earlier you mentioned like five calls a day, and we put two plus recovery conversations per day. I don't know what the magic number is for you, but two phone calls to other sober people every day. Conversations. Voicemails are cute. They don't count. Well, what if they don't answer? Well, call someone else, fool, and keep calling and keep calling and keep calling because it matters. It might matter to your recovery. It might matter to theirs. And I love getting to leave voicemails because I'm making those deposits in the phone bank. And it seems like God writes me a check when my recovery needs it most. So if I get a voicemail, that's a plus because that means I'm going to get a call back later on. These two phone calls are imperative. And in those phone calls, even though we'd like to talk about the Crimson Tide, that's not the primary purpose of it. That's an outside issue. Even though we'd like to talk, you would like to talk about it. Don't listen to him. Even though we'd like to talk about the sports, the weather, our vacation, that's for social conversation. This is a recovery call. First thing we're talking about is whether or not we're sober. You know, have you ever had one of those calls or someone's talking about everything else, dancing around, and then at the end, and then they say, I had a slip. Well, dude, let's back up. That's the most important thing to talk about. You know, you're in crisis, you're in trauma, you're headed down the road of death, and that's the last thing that we're going to talk about. So in our phone calls, we talk about whether or not we're sober. We talk about the obstacles to sobriety or successes. Dude, you know, I was triggered. I was going to go to that bookstore. Instead, luckily enough, someone else called me. So it reinforces phone calls work, voicemails work. We talk about our three circles, a lot about our middle circle in our phone calls. I don't know about you all, but even though I'm very athletic, you know, athletically looking here, I've never leaped from the outer circle all the way into the inner circle, you know? It took a few dance steps in the middle circle. So in our phone calls, we're talking about our middle circle. We're asking how to get out of it. We're talking about our outer circle, that connection, you know? If I'm in my middle circle, the only way to get out of it is to grab something from the outer circle and pull. And sometimes that's you. So we're talking about where you are in your middle circle. What you doing about it? How can I support you? We talk about the strategies that we talked about earlier with Jim. In those phone calls, we are always talking about our step work. You know, maybe you get those calls, someone's struggling with sobriety, struggling with their day, everything's going ish sideways. Did you do your step work? No. Why, had you thought about it? You know, how about you take a few minutes, do some step work, and call me back? My day has never gotten worse from doing step work. And if I'm talking to someone in the fellowship who isn't doing step work, hasn't done step work, won't do step work, I may not need to keep talking to them. You know, I can't keep them sober. You know, as Tom said, as you have all said, you know, the step work is the solution. So if I'm having these recovery calls, we're not talking about step work, we're not talking about the solution, and I don't have time. You don't have time. In the phone calls, we're talking about meetings. When was your last meeting, and when is your next meeting? You know, if I'm talking to someone, when was your last meeting? And his answer is, or he has to get out his calendar. Dude, we got an issue. You know, we got an issue. I also want to ask people about their last meeting, because if I didn't by chance get to go to that meeting, I want them to bring me a souvenir. What was the lesson? What was the learning? You know, share the nugget of wisdom that someone dumped on the room. Give that to me. Bring back souvenirs from every meeting. You know, I know in our meetings we say, you know, what happens here stays here. I think we're talking about the stories, not the solution. I don't think we're saying, don't let anyone who wasn't here have the solution. Keep it to us. It's private. I don't think we're talking about that. Share that solution. And last thing I want to mention on phone calls, this came up. This is a bit of a side note. Who the hell do you call? Gender. Let's talk about gender. Do you call only men only call men, women only call women? I answer the hotline for Phoenix, right? All the calls ring to my phone. All the calls ring to my phone. And a while back, they said, well, we need to have a woman answer the calls. And I suggested and said, we just have someone sober. And so I understand boundaries with phone calls and triggers and partners and, you know, figuring that out. You know, phone calls, structured phone calls, especially with that kind of a list, is a great way to practice being safe with someone you might be triggering. Again, I'm a gay man. And so if I came in the program, if I still wasn't able to call men in the program, I don't know that I'd still be sober. I've had to deal with establishing boundaries, deal with figuring out who was safe to call, who not to call. Not everyone, you know, I'm attracted to men, not every man I'm attracted to. You know, not every man has such poor boundaries that they're a victim to me, you know? And I would think that the same probably could be true for genders. I have sponsees, you know, men, before they get a woman's phone number, they check with me, she checks with her sponsor, maybe they check with spouses for safety or whatever. But a blanket rule? I'm not so sure about that. I just want to throw that in there because it's come up a few times today. You with me so far? It's going to get aggressive later on, so hang on, kids. I'm just trying to lull you into a sense of compliance here. Sponsor. Next step is sponsor. You can't sponsor yourself, right? If you could, that self-help book that you've got on your bookshelf would have worked already, and you wouldn't need to be here with us. So, Kool-Aid, do you have a sponsor? Are you using them? No, a sponsor is a guide to working the steps. That's all they are. Sponsor isn't my buddy. You know, sponsor isn't my friend. Sponsor isn't my spouse. Sponsor isn't my therapist. A sponsor, someone who's worked the 12 steps of SAA, has had a spiritual awakening, is sober, and can teach us what he or she has learned from working the steps. That's what the book says. Our text says that. I believe it. I hope you do too. So do you have a sponsor? What's your relationship like with your sponsor? Are you using them? Now, how regularly you contact your sponsor, I guess that's between you and your sponsor, right? Most of the time when I have new people that I sponsor, they call 6 days a week. Daddy needs a day off, you know? I don't care about them. They can call someone else on that day, you know? Later on, we reevaluate, we renegotiate depending on where they are in the spiritual solution and the sanity, the insanity, things like that. It varies. And with the guys I sponsor and the ladies I sponsor, we have scheduled phone time because it's really important. Everything that's important in my life is scheduled, right? Doctor's appointments, you know, carpet shampooing, haircut, you know, once a year, you know? So why not schedule those important phone calls? They matter to me. That next typo on your page shows 15 minutes of step work a day. I don't know if that's Arizona 15 minutes or Alabama 15 minutes. I don't know the time difference. And I don't know if 15 minutes is a magical number. What's magical is doing it every single day. Medication, you get medication and you have to take it same time every day to work, right? When I shared earlier this morning, when I started my step work, I would do it once a week. So I might have some solution, some access to the solution once a week, and it would fade away gradually. Then 2 or 3 days later, I'd have no solution. I'd kind of run dry for a few days and try to get charged up again. If I touch the word every day, if I do the work every day, I'm touching the solution. It also gives me something good to talk about on the phone calls, right? I don't know how long you need to do it. And we talked, you know, the guys I sponsored and in my fellowship, we talk about this daily step work. You know, not doing it 1 hour at a time, length at time. And some of you may have different experiences, and that's cool. I'm just sharing my experience. It seems like also doing it daily kind of reinforces the idea that this is a daily experience you're going to be having, not a weekend retreat and you're done, not a one shot and you're fixed, not a one and done kind of a thing. This is a process, and I want you to get used to doing this on a regular basis. I'm not telling you it's a lifelong process for you, but it's going to be ongoing. I don't want you to think it's a sprint, you know? This is a walk, it's a journey, and if you're expecting to get this all done in 1 hour once a week, I don't have that experience, and I haven't seen a lot of people who do. Next ingredient in the Kool-Aid. I love the Kool-Aid. I don't know you guys, but I love the Kool-Aid. The next ingredient is God. I've heard it's a spiritual program, right? You know, even though I was too drunk at those meetings, it says God a lot in our steps. I think it says God 9 times in our steps and says sex twice. You know, well, we're happy to talk about sex, but the God part, not so much. We cannot cut God out of the program. There's no God aspect of the 12 steps. It's all God. Every frickin' piece of it is God. So we can't have the 12 steps. We can't, according to our program anyway, we can't have the 12 steps without God. Now, who God is to you? Oh, hell, I don't know. You know, the steps are going to reveal that to you. You know, what you call it, who it is, what you believe. We're going to find out through the steps. But be aware the Kool-Aid involves God. If you have an issue with that, good. Good. Resist it all you want. The steps will take care of that. You know, the steps are pretty powerful. I trust that they'll take care of that. I just want every newcomer to know that this whole process is about seeking a relationship with a power greater than your disease. If you don't want to call it God, awesome. We'll find out what it is, though. And the final piece of the Kool-Aid is service work, contributing to the fellowship. For some of us, that means doing less service work so others can do more. You know, when I was new in the program, my sponsor said, if you want self-esteem, do esteemable acts. Contribute. Luckily enough, I was told, if you don't have a service commitment, you're not in the program. You're not doing your dues. The seventh step isn't just about the dollar. It's about the work to support the fellowship. What's your service commitment? I'm glad I learned that. It's about service. You know, Ray, one of the guys in our fellowship, talks a lot about the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety. It's really connection and community, you know, because our addiction isolated us from people so much. And so the opposite is that connection to God and to our fellow man and community. And service work provides an opportunity to practice that and to build it and to learn how to do it. Because if you're like me, I didn't know how to contribute in a way that didn't, that wasn't about getting or controlling and manipulating, service for service sake. That was just a quick overview of the ingredients of Kool-Aid. And for some of you, probably already saying, know it, done it, that's great. I just want to provide an access. And I also just want to get to share something that means a lot to my group. This has really helped us. Like I said earlier, when a newcomer comes in who's overwhelmed, just give them a packet Kool-Aid and just do this. Can you handle 15 minutes a day? I bet you can. And in a second, we're going to talk about newcomers, okay? So again, this is nothing new. It's meetings, step work, God's service. No duh. You know, the A quotes, we hear things like, call your sponsor before you drink or before you act out, right? Phone calls. Meeting makers make it. If they get a sponsor, work the steps. If not, then they just make meetings, you know? Or I can't, he can, so I'll let him. They're all pointing to ingredients of the Kool-Aid. It's just kind of fun to drink Kool-Aid. So, let's talk about being a newcomer, how to drink it, right? Newcomers are sloppy. They don't know how to do anything. We're going to help them. So, by a show of hands, who was a newcomer in a meeting at one point? All right, just about everyone. Some of you kind of leapfrogged that stage. Okay. So we were all newcomers. So hopefully some of this, you might relate to it, might have experienced this. And as I go through these different stages of recovery and how to drink the Kool-Aid at these stages, I'm going to kind of define that stage as I've experienced it, as I've witnessed it. If my definition hits you hard and you don't like it, that's okay. I wasn't thinking about you. I wasn't thinking about you. And it may not be true of you. You know, I don't know you. I've never seen you before, so what do I know, right? This is just my definition, my experience. So, yeah. And if you have a resentment, Tom's back there. He's going to set up a fourth step table. He'll walk you through it so you don't relapse because of what I've said. Gosh, my hands are clean of that whole deal, right? No responsibility. All right, so you're a newcomer. Who's a newcomer? What makes someone a newcomer? Let's hear some answers from the group. I was a newcomer. What defines you as a newcomer? Your first meeting. Never been to a meeting before. Brand new. That would make you new. Huh? Sometimes we read in the meetings like newcomers might be in their first six meetings before they decide if SA is right for you. You guys read that sometimes in the book? Some of the other people that we listed. Someone who's just out of rehab or just out of inpatient treatment. New to the program. Maybe they've done a lot of family of origin, trauma, horseback riding, challenge course work or whatever, you know? But they're new to the 12th step. How about someone who's just off a relapse? Well, some of the information must be new or they wouldn't be relapsing or something's, you know? So no shame in that. That's just go back. Let's see what we missed. If someone's at step 6, step 7, step 8, and they're relapsing, something might have been missed back at step 1, you know? Another one we listed out there is maybe a transferee from another 12-step program. Coming in with a lot of AA knowledge, and coming in, you see, and some of us struggle to come in from another program. I know what I'm doing. Well, then why didn't it work? Because you took that sexual inventory in step 4 over there in AA. You were honest in your 10th step, weren't you? Oh. And this isn't to, getting to shame. Just if you're new, if you're coming new to a program, why not consider yourself new and start from the beginning? It may help you. Now, I made a mistake one time. I was sponsoring this guy. He'd been sponsored by other people. There was a transition, and I took him on at like step 8. And I kind of, I took him on his word, and I was lazy, and I assumed he was fine where he was. He was a newcomer to me. I really needed to go back and kind of understand where he was with those spiritual principles. I didn't treat him like a newcomer. And as a result, he really didn't get the support that he needed. So I want to talk about the Kool-Aid ingredients and how they may benefit, how a newcomer might use these Kool-Aid ingredients, okay? So the first point, those meetings again, back to the top of your Kool-Aid. My gosh, you can put this in your pocket, your wallet, everywhere. It'll crystallize. The ink will stain your shorts. It'll be fantastic, So 3+ meetings, what to look for. Remember, 3+ meetings is a minimum. If you want minimum recovery, do the minimum. If you want more than minimum, do more than the minimum. It's up to you. Maybe 3+ is what your life can handle. There's a way to do it. So I'm encouraging newcomers, exceed the minimum. Find them. Check them out. So if you're new, what to look for at a meeting? Well, when I was new, any meeting was better than no meeting, right? I got to sit in a chair and not act out for most of it. It was a great meeting, you know? Bathroom break, you know? It was a chance to have a little bit of respite to come out of the storm of my addiction. So any meeting was better than no meeting. Unfortunately, they weren't all better than no meeting because I was so susceptible. I was so vulnerable. I was willing to listen to anything anyone would say. Some people were selling the 12 steps, God, solution, and some people were selling half measures and this book and that therapist. And here, let me give you his note, all this other stuff. So if you're new, if you know someone new, I encourage you to looking for the sober meetings. When you walk in, they're using language, the language of recovery. You know, sobriety, surrender, acceptance, that the language. And when they talk and you read the book, the words are just popping out. They come out of the text. There's an energy in a sober room. You know what I mean? The people are cutting up. They're playing. It's not a glum lot. You know, we're serious about recovery, just not serious about life. Very different things. They're playful. They honor the traditions. The meeting honors the boundaries that they've set. Have you ever been to a meeting where they say, I don't know, no cell phones in the meeting. So everyone's doing this through the meeting? Or no crosstalk, right? No crosstalk. We don't allow crosstalk in our meeting. Well, I don't mean to crosstalk, but I'm going to anyhow. What the heck? Yeah. We set boundaries and we don't maintain them, you know? No, not a sober meeting. I don't know what the hell that is. But so if you're new, 3+ meetings, it's the minimum. With your phone calls, you're new. 2+ is the minimum. And when you're new, you don't have phone numbers, right? Where are you going to get phone numbers? Well, we'll give you this list that you're going to use as a bookmark and never look at again because you're never going to call us because you don't know who the hell we are because it says Mike here 6 times and you don't know which frickin' Mike you're calling and you're going to talk to yourself out of calling him because you don't know who he is, right? You do that? And your group may have phone lists. My group did away with the phone lists because we found that we were giving the phone list to the newcomer and letting them run away with it, and we had no connection to them. We found that by getting rid of the phone list after the meetings, we were having to go up to the newcomer. Hey, dude, you know, I want to support you. You have any questions? Why don't you give me your phone number? That way, when some of this settles in, when he gives me his phone number, I give him mine. We exchange. There's this, I don't know, psychological thing. I used to work in a mall, and there was one of those skincare carts. You guys know those? You know, Sarah, miss, you know, they give you the sample. And as soon as you touch it, you're hooked. We have to listen to their speech then. It's just some kind of psychological thing. We do the same thing with the newcomers with the phone number. If I give them mine, they have to get theirs. It's just, I don't know, it just works that way. It's evil, you know, and I like evil. The phone number thing, also that gives me a chance when I give you a phone number, I get permission from you to call you. It's okay, I've connected with you. I also get to nickname you in my phone, you know, tall, skinny, or, you know, I don't know, Taco Bell, or I don't know what, you know, what do you call it? You know, bad haircut, Nick, whatever you call the guy, you know, or the gal, you know, so that getting permission for a newcomer really empowers them making those phone calls. They may not know what to say on the phone call. So if we get a phone call from newcomers, we're going to teach them how to ask questions, right? We tell them our circles. Maybe we tell them our story. Maybe we don't. They want, how do I get a sponsor? What the hell is a sponsor? How do I, you know? So we start farming them out. You know, you got to call so-and-so. He lives in your area. You got to call her. She had that same inner circle, and she can tell you how she overcame it. Just because I'm getting the phone call from the newcomer doesn't mean I'm the only solution. What I am, I'm the customer service hotline. I'm kind of gathering some information. I'm going to start farming them out, you know, sharing phone numbers with them. The guys in my fellowship and the gals, a lot of us feel that our phone number no longer belongs to us. It belongs to God. So if I encounter someone in the fellowship that needs to talk to them, it's my privilege to hand their phone number off. You got to call her. Here's her phone number. It just makes it a lot easier. If you think my phone number would help someone else get sober, give it away. It's not mine anyway. God's everything or God's nothing. In those phone calls, we teach them how to ask questions about sobriety, steps, sponsorship, and those tools that we talked about today and the tool of the middle circle and the 3 circles. We begin to teach them. And we can use that phone call for the newcomer as the bridge between the last meeting and the next meeting. You know, when we're on those phone calls with the newcomer, we contract with them. When's your next meeting? Let me help you pick it out. Let me pick you up. let me buy you lunch. You know, we get them to their next meeting. A lot of, I'll just talk about Don, one of my sponsees. He said that phone call between the meeting was his bridge. You know, even if it was 24 hours, it was the bridge that allowed him to carry the lesson from that first meeting and gave him the courage to go to the next meeting. He doesn't know if he could have made it to a second meeting without something in between. I think the phone's hard for all of us. Was it hard for you? Y'all, the phone calls, really, really hard. It's hard to make the phone calls. It's a little bit easier to get a voicemail. And then a few days later, maybe a text. And then maybe by the third time, fine, I'll answer this fool's call just to make him stop calling, you know? Yet getting to call a newcomer really shows them that calls aren't so bad. And maybe we can even schedule a time for them to call me back. Why don't you call me tomorrow on your lunch break and see how you're doing? That's phone calls for newcomers, okay? So sponsors, newcomer. We hear some things about sponsorship. I'm going to wait until I'm sober for 30 days before I find the right sponsor, right? Or I'm going to wait until I'm ready. Oh, hell, you're never going to be ready, you know? I don't think readiness is a requirement for getting sober, just willingness, you know? The steps and your sponsor will take care of the readiness. It's never too soon to get a sponsor. And so when we have a newcomer in the room, we're talking about sponsorship right away and trying to help them identify who's available. We really try to dispel that myth as to who would be right for them. Who would be right for them? Someone who's capable and willing and available. You know, dispel that myth that they need to find someone who acts out like they did. You know, not everyone in town has a relationship with sheep. What are they going to do? Wait until there's another sheep person in the room. It could be a while, depending on your town. In some towns, all the sponsors might be able to help them. I don't know. But that sponsorship, and sometimes it's a temporary sponsor. Sometimes it's the guy, the gal who's going to sponsor them to find a sponsor. Sometimes it's the sponsor who's just there for the zero step, you know? I'm just going to sponsor you to work on your circles. So you got your teeth in them so they won't wiggle away. And while you're doing that, then you can help them find a sponsor. You know, I have a lot of temporary sponsees. 5-6 years later, they're still temporary. Once one person gets a hold of them in that sponsorship relationship, it allows us to kind of assess too, to get to know them. They're already hooked in. It's never too soon for a sponsee to get a sponsor. And if it's not a full, a temporary, a circles, you know, even someone just sponsoring them to drink the Kool-Aid. You don't have to be a sponsor by title, but a go-to person that can be a guide to working the program. Even just a guide to drinking the Kool-Aid can help them feel, you know, involved, encouraged, supported. And there will be some time at the end for questions if I talk faster, but I don't think that's humanly possible. So there may not be time for questions. It's by design. So that daily step work, that next blank there, 15 minutes a day, that daily maintenance of spiritual condition, I really want to teach, and we really want to teach the newcomer that 15 minutes is doable. But I've got a wife, I've got a job, I've got kids, you know, I a lot of reasons why I can't do step work. 15 minutes a day. That means a little less of, one of those ESPN shows, a little bit less of, you know, the radio, a little bit less of playing Sudoku or whatever you do, a little bit less. If you can't handle 15 minutes, how about 5 minutes a day three times? Can you find 5 minutes three times? Nope, okay. How about every time you poop? Can you, well, come on, raise your hand, you take the phone into the bathroom, you read, some of us do. Every time you poop. Go to work 15 minutes early, and before you get out of the car, do your step work. Well, at the end of your day, when you get in your car, do it before you go home. You can't find 15 minutes, hand your schedule to me and I'll find where the wiggle room is. You know what I mean? There's 15 minutes is doable. We also encourage sponsees when they're new that 15 minutes earlier in the day is better. You know, that end of the night, step work right before you go to bed, so that as soon as you put your head to the pillow, it's gone and done. 23 hours of the day could have been used to like suck up the energy from that step, to process it, to share it, to consider it in my phone calls, at the meeting I went to. Nah, I do my step work before I go to bed so my pillow gets the benefit. Yeah. Nah. So if we can help the sponsees do it early, do it often, do it frequently, do it daily. It's much easier to get a newcomer doing step work daily when they think that's just what we do, right? As opposed to getting a sponsor, someone new in the program who does it once a week, and then trying to get them to increase the frequency. We're happy to decrease it later on, but increasing, it doesn't work. At least it, not the way I've seen. With God, many newcomers, some people I've seen, maybe they come in with no concept of God or a strong concept of God that hasn't worked for them, you know? Sometimes it seems like the dumb and the faithless have an easier time getting sober. Dumb and faithless. I don't know why it took me so long then, but the dumb and the faithless. But someone with a very strong concept of what God is. Earlier I mentioned in my community there is a lot of Mormon people. A lot of guys that served the church. They went on their mission. They listened to their bishop. They did everything they were encouraged to do to get sober, and it still didn't work. Something's wrong with God, because I did everything I was told that God would do if I did that, and it didn't work. And I hear from them that there's this block because they come in with such a faith, and that didn't work for them. And so there's this God block for many people when they come in. I can do anything in the steps except for that God thing, right? And, well, all the steps are the God thing. Well, we're screwed, aren't we, if they can't do the God thing? And so explaining and helping newcomers understand their job is just to do the steps, and whatever they need, whatever power they need over their addiction will be revealed through the steps. Whatever power they've had has been phenomenal, but there's an additional power that will be revealed through the steps. Their understanding will be through the steps. So if you have newcomers who are struggling with the God aspect of the Kool-Aid, it's just really the steps, you know? God's going to show up through the steps. At least that's what we found. And if you're new, service work. Well, I'm new. What can I do? What can I do to serve the fellowship? What can I do to enable the meeting to continue? You know, recovery is a give-and-take relationship. It's not all about you, Tiger. You're going to have to pay your dues, too. You're going to have to keep this going, you know? So if you're new, some of the service work you can do, show up early. The meeting starts at 7 o'clock, not 7:01. If the meeting starts at 7 o'clock, that means your butt is in the chair at 6:45. That way, when the next newcomer comes in, he sees you, he might feel safer. For the women, if you're going to a mixed meeting, you're there at 6:45. That way, when the newcomer woman peeks in the door and she sees and looks at her, you're there. So she feels safe. She's not the only one in the room. 6:45 also is the time beforehand where we're chit-chatting. We're busting on each other. We're talking about the stuff, almost like how to live life according to the principles without direct instruction. You know, it gives newcomers a chance to observe us in our natural habitat, doing what we do, you know? And if you're like me when I was new, it also gave me 15 minutes for the squirrels to kind of quiet down a little bit. They were still chattering, you know? Gave me a chance to find my seat, and then 10 minutes later move my seat because the guy over there was in shorts and I could see up his shorts. Gave me a chance to move over here because that person was too loud to go to the bathroom. 15 minutes, it takes a while to get settled in. Other service work. If you're going to show up early, how about stay late? Stay till the meeting's over. Help clean up. We set the chairs. We have service positions. Go water those damn plants. I spend a lot of money on those. I want my room to look beautiful. I want our space to look lovely. Make sure it's clean. You know, I like the chairs in a line. You know, stay afterwards. Make sure the last person has help walking to the car if it's dark after the meeting. We don't like, in our fellowship, we tend to discourage one-on-one walking out to the car. We like to walk out in a group. Three is a nice, safe number. You know, two. Another thing you can do as a newcomer, get phone numbers. That's service. Did you get a phone number today? Good service. You're asking me for my number helps me. And then final thing you can do as a newcomer, just work the Kool-Aid. Pretty easy service work, huh? It's not the world. It's not going to take extra time. It's just a commitment. And if we package that, if we acknowledge that, that's good service work. You showed up early. That's good service work. You stayed. I love that the way you went and greeted that newcomer. That's awesome. It helps build that connection, builds that self-esteem. It gets them to be part of us. Because for me, for a while, when I went to the early meetings, I always felt like I was at their meeting. You know, until I shared my first step, the meeting, I always felt like I was a visitor and I had to say please to use the bathroom and stuff like that. It's really cool when a newcomer starts investing in the fellowship and does some service work and it becomes their meeting. Well, that's it? Huh. Sounds pretty doable for a newcomer, doesn't it? Not overwhelming. It's a lot of information to take in, and maybe you're already talking to newcomers this way. If so, fantastic. But next group's a little tougher, maybe. The next group I identified as the still suffering sex addict. The still suffering sex addict. And I'm sure that's going to sound fabulous on the tape. If you can all say still suffering sex addict 3 times without lisping, you get a secret prize. Yeah, it's a lot of S's, isn't it? Anyhow, so who the heck is a still suffering sex addict? I've been frequently. Anytime I take my will back, anytime I get self-reliant, anytime I think I can get away with doing less than you're doing to get sober, the suffering comes back pretty quickly. I've got a list here of some qualities, that are still suffering sex addict, and I have a little bit of fear of sharing these because I'm afraid someone might get offended. And I've edited this out. So I'm just going to go with this and trust that God will take care of me. With this listing, again, we looked at folks in our fellowship that we have done some stuff that seems like it's suffering. It's preventing them from accessing the solution. By no terms, am I meaning to call anyone out or offend anyone. So if this is you and you're not suffering, fabulous. No harm intended, okay? So here's my listing. Chronic relapsers. You got more chips than a Vegas poker table, right? Chronic relapsers, struggling. The tourist. You've all read pages 99 through 100, 101. The essay tourist, still suffering. The non-participant. The person that comes in, sits down, shuts up, leaves. Suffering. The person who's a dry drunk or a dry hump in the room. The one who's abstinent, not sober. The one who's just not acting out, crosses their legs when they drive, so they won't, you can only cross your legs for so long to not to not act out. There's some suffering in there. It takes a lot of energy to not act out. It takes a lot less energy to stay sober. It's a lot easier to live in the outer circle than it is to get back there. You're swimming up against the stream if you're living in the inner, the middle circle to get out. The individual who does no service work. We identified that as someone who's still suffering. A little selfish. I got mine. You're responsible for running the meetings. You're responsible for in a group. You're responsible for the trusted servant. I'm not. I put my dollar in. A dollar is only half the deal. Individuals attend one meeting a week. We think that's suffering because it's really hard to take care of your own recovery, to support the fellowship, to look for the newcomers, to ensure that the meetings continue to grow and thrive. One meeting, it's a lot to expect of 60 minutes to fully, to fill your heart and to help you, access the solution. The bleeding deacons, those who are stuck in the way it used to be, the guy or gal who has the chair leaned against the back wall, arms crossed, and they're talking about starting the meeting 12 years ago, and that's the way it's always been, whose program, whose lines are the same as they've always been. They don't have a lot of aha moments. There's no new learning. It's the same. Every time they open their mouth, same thing. It may not be the same suffering as the person who's acting out a lot, but my recovery has been about always being open to the next God shot, the next God lesson, the opening. I need to be open to more experiences in the program. The suffering may not be the same as the person who's relapsing. The people who are acting out on their character defects. Yay, you're sexually sober, but you're a prick. there's this process of going from sexual sobriety to emotional sobriety to spiritual sobriety. If you just stop at the sex, you're missing the point. Sex wasn't a problem. It was our solution. It was the wrong solution. The shapeshifter, the invisible, the people we don't know their name, we don't know their inner circle, we don't know their sobriety date, we don't know what step they're on, we don't know their sponsor. No one's ever gotten a call from them. People who don't have a sponsor or won't sponsor. Those who are terminally unique. Well, you can do the steps that way, but I'm doing the steps over here. They're totally different. The folks who won't work a program and the folks that are here for someone else. I'm just here to save the marriage. I'd love you to save the marriage. The only chance I know have is if you get your ass sober and have a spiritual awakening. And then your marriage might have a 49% chance. We don't save marriages in SAA. We're not skilled at that. God and sobriety, they have a better track record than we do, So that's who we identified who might be a still suffering sex addict. Whew, thanks for letting me go through that list. Oh, the room's quiet. So if you are a still suffering sex addict, or if you know a still suffering sex addict, let's talk about their meetings. Are you just going to them? Are you participating in them? Are you contributing to them? Yeah, I go to meetings. I say nothing. I already got my fill. I got what I needed. You know, what's your participation level? Like, what's your contribution? Are you going to the meetings to only share your wisdom? Or are you going there to also receive the wisdom of the fellowship? If you're done learning, you still might be suffering. So maybe, what's that thing? God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth. Use them in that order. 2 ears, 1 mouth, okay? Listen. Question, if you're still suffering, what's your behavior like at the meeting? Do you arrive late all the time? You know, arrive late. I'm late, but I've got this big old, you know, coffee from Starbucks that took me 10 minutes to get because that coffee was more important than the meeting, right? I show up late. I disrupt you because you're in my chair, so I have to squeeze by you, you know? And once I show up, I check my email. I'm on my phone. I sit in the back where I don't have to interact with anybody, you know? And when I share, it's about the problem. So if you're still suffering, if you know someone who's suffering, check the behavior at the meeting. You know, look at the newcomers, the people that are there 1 week, 1 month. Is your behavior like theirs? Is it, you know, are you seeking the solution? Do you still have the desperation? And if you're still suffering, when you do share, are you offering the fifth step, the fifth tradition? Are you offering the solution? Are you talking about the steps? Are you talking about the solution? Are you talking about God? Are you talking about all the other outside issues, all the other issues, all the whys, all the why nots? What are you saying? If you don't know, ask us. We'll tell you. We can tell you exactly what you're saying. And when I'm suffering, please tell me what I'm saying. Robbie, you're full of crap. You keep talking on. You drone on. You don't listen. You know, it's really helpful to have someone parrot back, you know, what we say. If we're still suffering, something we can do is we can look at our phone calls. And you talked about that minimum. Many of us, if maybe you're like me, my phone call circle can get small. I can get comfortable. Call the same guys, same gals every week. I notice that I'm suffering because my phone call list isn't expanding. You know, that newcomer, I've never called them before. They've been around 3 months. I don't have their number yet. What's wrong with that? You know, my phone list is the same. People know when I'm calling them. And in fact, a lot of the guys I sponsor, once they see that someone keeps coming up on their phone list when they check in with me, I say, good, now they're on your A team. They don't count for outreach calls. Keep calling them because they're your buddy. They're your pal. They're your accountability partner. They're your peer. There's something else in recovery. They don't count as an outreach call anymore. So when I'm suffering, I have to look at who I'm calling. I have to look at what I'm talking about on those phone calls. You know, am I still talking about the steps, the solution, my struggles? Am I still seeking help? Or have the conversations gotten so friendly that I'm asking about your work and your job and your kids and, you know, your vacation? Sometimes when I'm suffering, the focus of those calls shifts from recovery, sobriety, desperation to chit chat, to check it off the box. Yeah, I called someone, but what did I get out of it? The periods of my recovery when I've been suffering, I've had to also look at the relationship I've had with my sponsor. I'm really blessed right now. I think Charlie and I have been working together about 4 years. And there have been times when I've been suffering when I haven't gone to him with my problems as much. You know, I allowed myself to get too long of a leash. That relationship kind of began to change, from sponsor-sponsee to buddy and peer. I really needed a guide to work in the steps, and I continue to need a guide, even though I've been through the steps many times. That's what my sponsor is. So when we're suffering, we have to sometimes look at our sponsor. I want to read something out of the green book, if you don't mind. I love this wireless mic. Sorry, guys. I'll just take a minute. Do you all read the section out of withdrawal and relapse? Do you know that page? No? Then I'll read it to you. Page maybe 67, the favorite section of the book. I love this section. This really goes to the topic of sponsorship when we're suffering. So it says, any day, oh, That's my ride over. Any relapse is an opportunity to take inventory of how well we are working the program. Here are some questions to consider. Do we find ourselves returning to slippery situations or places? Are we attending meetings regularly? Or are we finding excuses to do something else instead? Are we listening at meetings? Do we judge what others are saying rather than trying to relate to it? Are we being honest when we share? Do we have a sponsor? And have we been keeping in touch with our sponsor? Have we been fully honest with our sponsor? Are we using all of the tools of the program? Are we making phone calls? Are we praying and meditating? Are we working the 12 steps? Are we stuck on a particular step? Are we avoiding a step? That's from withdrawal and relapse. And it talks a lot about sponsor there, doesn't it? If I'm in withdrawal, if I'm in relapse, I kind of think I'm either preventing a relapse or headed toward one. I'm either preventing a relapse or headed toward one. And this section here tells me to check my relationship with my sponsor, how I'm using them. Sometimes we get in these relationships with our sponsors where we get so familiar that the relationship kind of gets busted. So I have to look at the title of my sponsor, the relationship with my sponsor. And sometimes I have to look at, is my sponsor challenging me now, or are they co-signing my bullshit? Have we gotten such a relationship that they're used to my stories and they don't challenge me? Are they co-signing my bullshit? That's the line, okay? We tend to do that a lot. That's okay. Your journey, your story, your truth. My ass, you know? It just might be time to change your work with your sponsor. It's not a bad thing to change sponsors. I had one sponsor recently. It was time. And it was time because our machine had run out of gas. You know what I mean? Some of the magic had been lost. There wasn't a sparkle. There wasn't a kick. There wasn't a challenge. We noticed that we didn't have this drive to get together anymore. And I love Ryan. He's a great guy. He's sober. But he needed something else. And I don't know what it was. And there was no shame. It wasn't a fire. He wasn't fired. I wasn't fired. We've had a successful relationship. And now let's help you find the next person you can be in a different successful relationship with. It's not a bad thing to change sponsors. It's not. It's the human condition. All of us will eventually change sponsors. They'll die or we'll die, right? Eventually. Except for those two back there. They're going to stay around forever. Unless they already did, then I don't know what's going on. If you're still suffering like me, like I was, what's your daily step work like? I challenge you. Again, that nighttime step work. Sometimes you hear some folks that have been around for a while. They're doing step work regularly. It's at night when all the other work is done. So I challenge the folks that might be suffering, put the step work in your recovery as the first priority of the day. You know, go potty in the morning, do your step work. You know, those AA people in the room, you hit your knees first thing in the morning, right? It just sets such a great foundation. Maybe it's something as simple as just changing up the when. Can you imagine just a simple shift of when you do your step work might be enough to address that suffering? Another question, are you doing it? Are you doing your step work? Maybe you've been through the steps already, you know, one, but there's more. Come on, my head was so far up there. I was so buried in wherever. The first few times I went through the steps, there's still more learning. I can't imagine that everything I needed, I got through the steps the first time. Maybe you did. Not, you know. So as a sponsor and a sponsee, I encourage people, we got to go through these again. You know, there's stuff in there. There's the steps. We got to study the traditions. There's the principles. Let's go back to the steps, because when you did the steps, you were 4 years, you know, younger and 4 years more in your disease. I'd like you to go through the steps again as the man or the woman you are today and see what's there. See what when we go through the steps again, what you need to surrender. You know, when we go through the 12th step, we practice these principles in all areas of our life, right? The first time I went through the steps, it was just on my crotch. You know, I've got, you know, the steps to do around my money, my relationships, my job, you know, my mouth, apparently, you know, got a lot of work to do. And it's also not just about working the steps, but living the steps. So if you know someone who's suffering, if you think you might be suffering at times, are you living these spiritual principles? Do they guide you in your everyday function at work? How you behave? When are you doing your steps? Where are you doing your steps? Who are you sharing your step work with? Been around long enough, you're doing your step work and you kind of keep it to yourself? What a shame. Share it with us. If you're still suffering, I want to know about God. How are you talking to God and how are you listening to God? You know, many of us struggle at times with meditation. you know, I've this good friend, I'll mention Ray again. He's, you know, we hang out a lot in program. He's kind of a hippie, you know, ching ching and smelly candles and, you know, music and stuff like that. And I'm a little more like candy plastique, you know what I mean? I'm a little more concrete. And we both have to find the meditation that works for us. We're constantly looking for new ways. Meditation in that talking to God, my prayers. Is it just quiet? I love it when I get to say my prayers out loud in the car. When I hear them out loud, I hear what a fool I sound like, you know? Like I'm trying to tell God what to do as opposed to seeking his will. You know, I'm telling God, I'm making statements to God instead of asking questions. You know, another sponsee, he got a lot out of writing his prayers so he could go back and read them. You know, his journaling for a while was writing his prayers down every day so he could see what the hell he was praying for. You know, the other part, that listening, that meditation, when I'm, you know, when I'm praying, it's like an old radio station. I'm dialing God. And when I'm meditating, I'm hearing what's coming out of the speaker. And sometime I think my meditating should all be through the bright white light in the sky, you know, coming down. Ah, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes my meditation, God is going to speak to me through the quiet, through the noisy, through the music, through the meditation, the speaker meetings. I love like the 1 minute meditation at the urinal. You know, that middle of the day, stop myself. Where am I? Am I present? How's my body? How am I feeling? Am I right with God? What's, you know, what's annoying me right now? Meditation in the morning is phenomenal. Meditation at night is great. Well, I seem to struggle during the day. And sometimes suffering sex addicts may have a great morning ritual and be done with their program. So the question is, how are you carrying that prayer and meditation throughout the day? And the final piece on the still suffering sex addict is service commitment. What is your service commitment? Not what do you do for the fellowship. What's your service commitment? Do you have a job? If you've been around a while, are you helping to carry the message? Do the newcomers serve more than you? You know, or has service replaced your recovery? Have you been around so long that I sponsor everyone, you know? I lead all the meetings. I take all the money and I do all this stuff. Well, I don't have time to pray because I'm too busy helping everyone else. You know what I mean? Some of us, and this is where I've suffered a lot. I do a lot for you and I forget me. And that doesn't work. Last group, and I'll get through this quickly because I know I'm long-winded. The Kool-Aid for those who are sober, who have long-term sobriety. By show of hands, who would define themselves as sober or long-term sobriety? All right, there you go. I don't know how long-term sobriety is, you know? Some meetings, it's an hour and a half. Some groups, it's a year. I don't know. I really don't know. In my home group, we have a speaker meeting once a month. It's a potluck. And to be selected to speak, you have to have long-term sobriety. And that group defines long-term as having a year or more. And when we first started that meeting, we only had like 3 people that would qualify. So we're praying that people would stay sober so we could have a speaker the 4th month and then the 5th month. And now there's a waiting list. So folks that are long-term sober, they're sober. Maybe they're sponsored. You know, they should be sponsored and are sponsoring. They've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. A spiritual awakening is the result of these steps. Their language talks a lot more about God than it does about porn and triggers, you know? Maybe they're experiencing the ninth step promises. So with their meetings, with our meetings, those who identify this way, is there a balance between learning and teaching? Are we just, you know, managing the group? Are we leading the group? Are we still following? There must be a give and take because I don't have all the answers. Are they always in the back row? Do they sometimes sit in the front row? Where do we fit? Seems like at this stage in the game, sometimes we have to mix it up a little bit, not get locked in the way we receive it and perceive it. And then I kind of have to ask those who are in this place, what does your meeting behavior say to the newcomer? If everyone in the room came in and behaved the way you did at a meeting, what the hell would the meeting be like? Would it be a sober place? Would it be a God place? Would we all be sharing about the steps? What would it be like if everyone, because I think frequently in meetings, newcomers look to the people who have long-term sobriety and model their behavior after that person. So what's your behavior look like? Phone calls. I mentioned earlier, drop that A-list. Your go-to guys, your go-to gals, drop it. Get onto the newcomers. Sometimes, you know, I sponsor guys, you sponsor guys, you sponsor guys, you know, like 7 generations. Sometimes they think, oh, they can get the newcomer. I need to let them do it too. And sometimes they do that because I'm a service junkie. But other times I really need to let them, I really need to push them out of the way. elbow them out of the way so I can get to that newcomer. Because I need that newcomer just as much as he does, you know? Who do you call? And who challenges you on, in your recovery? You know, I'm grateful to be, really grateful to be here with you, really grateful to be here with you all. And I hope to get some numbers, because this is what's challenging my recovery right now, is getting numbers with folks who practice their recovery outside of my home group. So I get a different perspective, a different question, a different experience. That's really challenging my behavior. Because if I just stayed with the folks I go to meetings with, even though we have so many meetings in my building, they're the same people, you know? We have newcomers coming in, but no one's challenging. And I'd ask those of us who are sober, long-term sobriety, what was the most recent aha moment on your phone call? When was the last time you could have had a V8 when you were talking to someone? You know, that thing, you know? When did you hit yourself in the head and said, duh, I should have known that. When are you getting the awareness? If not, maybe I need to be calling new people. You know, maybe I need to give you a call, Carla, and have you rattle my cage a little bit. Cage rattling is good for those who are sober, you know? And then with sponsor, is the relationship still prompting growth? All areas of life. Frequency of contact. It does change and does evolve. I speak with Charlie Tuesday mornings. We have windshield time in the car because he lives out of town. Every Tuesday morning I get to talk to Charlie. Before, when I was early in the steps, I spoke to my sponsor more. Right now it's once a week, and in the future I wonder what it will become. Will it become more? Not, but we have a set schedule. I'm still maintaining that contact. It's not a when things are good, when things are bad, because I don't know when they're going to be that way, and I want my sponsor to encounter me on a regular basis still. And then with that daily step work, what is your current step work like? Sometimes in meetings you'll hear someone say, I worked 1, 2, 3 in the morning and 10, 11 all day long. Okay, well, what's that look like? Show me what it looks like. Read to me your step work. Did you write something? You know, sometimes when we're sober, we do get that intuitive thought or decision. We do internalize the steps, but sometimes my step work gets so much in my head, it's not in my writing, it's not in my action. It's just I'm thinking the steps. And I need to go back sometimes to the way everyone does it. We all write out the step work, right? You know, if you've gone through the steps, now what? I question again, have you studied the traditions? Now what? Is it time for the steps on your other relationships? I think the sex, getting sober from sex was like, it's like God's practice test. You know what I mean? Like the practice. And now I get to go to the real test, and that's every frickin' thing else. Sex was just one aspect of who we are. And my addiction, it affected every part of my being, the way I interacted, when I asked for a job, when I paying money, my bills, my, you know, how I maintain my home, you know? I'm really sober, but I haven't made my bed for 3 frickin' weeks, you know what I mean? That's a sign of sickness. I don't know if it is for you, but it is for me. So we get to go through the steps in all these other areas. And finally, with God, if you're sober, are you having a spiritual awakening? Is your life today about who you, your relationship with your higher power? If it's not, this may not work long term for you unless you do something about it. If you're sober and your recovery is still about your sex addiction, not about your spiritual awakening, caution, you know, danger, Will Robinson, danger. It's still about acting out, not about how I can serve God, my fellow man, you know? Isn't that what the book says somewhere? You know, we're to be of maximum service to God and our fellow man. But if my job when I'm sober or long-term sobriety is just to not act out, it's a crappy job to have. And then service work. You know, it says, I think in the second tradition, that leaders, our leaders are trusted servants. They do not govern, but they do lead. That's why they're called leaders. They wouldn't have used that name. So if you're sober, if you have long-term sobriety, you may be a leader in your fellowship. So how are you leading your fellowship? Leaders are going someplace with a fellowship. And sometimes I look at myself, I'm a leader in my fellowship. That's okay to be. I'm a leader in my fellowship. So how am I leading the fellowship to where God wants us to go next? If I'm following God, am I helping lead the fellowship to our next growth opportunity? By growth, I mean emotional and spiritual growth. Is my fellowship still stuck where it is? If I'm a leader, I'm keeping us contained and not helping us grow and learn and make mistakes as God kind of commands us to. I may not be doing the best service. Also, am I handing off service? Is the service structure in my fellowship such that I'm kind of training up the next person? Am I hogging all the service? It's all about me. Am I unwilling to let go because you won't do it the way I've set it up? Yeah, that's exactly what I say. Am I unwilling to get newcomers to be trusted servant for a month because they won't show up? You know, so I got to make sure I'll be there. You know what I mean? Who has the key to the building? Well, I do. What? How am I handing this off? This, you know, this legacy, this fellowship. Who's the next person? You know, so I can get out of the front line and go back to the beginning. And back to the way it used to be. This progression, if I'm a leader in the fellowship, this progression of service work, that people are learning how to use their spiritual gifts and tools in the fellowship, and it grows, it's not stagnant. And sometimes I'm, as a person with long-term sobriety, I am suffering in the rooms when I hold on to service commitments too long, when I don't give other people a chance to succeed at those, and when I don't give other people a chance to fail at those. And that really shows for me when I'm suffering because I'm holding on and not trusting that God's going to take care of us. I'm skipping that section. I know you know this stuff. You've heard it before. You've read it in the green book, in the big book. This is kind of Recovery 101. And it's really good because we don't have to customize this stuff. This isn't special stuff. This is God's service, prayer, step work. This is the regular stuff we do. Many of you already do this every day, and this is a no-brainer. This is no big news. We just like the package of the Kool-Aid. We think it's cute. It's easy to remember. It's not overwhelming. Just do a couple things. You know, call some people, do some step work daily, 15 minutes a day. For us, in my fellowship, it allows us to kind of work this a similar program to encourage us. We know where everyone is. Earlier today, Jim talked about the need to have really clear circles so we understand each other, what the heck we're talking about. And in our fellowship, when we're all kind of work the same Kool-Aid, then we know where we are in the program. When I check in with Carla and she's not checking in about step work, I know, oh, honey, you missed an ingredient. Let's chat about that. This kind of similar program allows us to hold each other accountable and hold each other up. It's worked for us. And if you like it, I hope it'll work for you. I'm done.